What's that?
Ronin?
What's Ronin?
It's a movie
samurai.
It's a reference.
It's a samurai movie.
Ooh, ooh, ooh.
It's not a samurai movie.
Let's
it's
the last Clueless samurai. Clueless and then talk about Clueless.
We could do that.
Yes.
Sometime. You set it up.
I don't think I could. I'd be embarrassed.
Why?
You can say whatever you want. You can edit it down.
And yeah, if there's something specific you say, you just tell me, hey, you know what? Listen to the, and I'll just clap.
Well, but doing that to your hair, like.
What?
What are you doing?
I have to make myself pretty for the podcast.
And we're gonna eat Philly cheesesteak. And then he said, we're gonna watch Ronin and Red Dawn in that order.
He said that.
And I said, whatever you want, Blaine. You're the conductor of this crazy train.
Well, you got the stripes.
Yep.
It's red, white, and blue.
Mm-hmm.
I put a few stripes across his back last night.
Oh, we were. Speaking of last night,
mm-hmm.
Fire tits.
You really wanna talk about this?
No.
Hey, speaking of,
I got out of here at about the
you
right
did.
Time.
Speaking of fire,
we changed to one of those softcore things that was on that. And we were actually slipping past it.
And did Rachel show up just in time?
No, like Blaine goes, dude, she had fire around her tit. Like, and then, so we went back just so we could look for it. And she had, like, this girl had, like explosions, like, tattooed around her nipples.
And then
she had
fire.
Eyes on her lower back above her butt. It was the weirdest, and she was really nasty.
And what was the movie called?
Kinky Kong.
Kinky Kong.
Kong, K-O-N-G?
Yeah,
like
it was
Donkey
like,
Kong?
It was like King
like
Kong,
King
but
Kong,
Kinky
but King Kong.
Kong. It was a guy in a Kinky Kong suit.
So, welcome to the Theater Podcast, again. Welcome again. Hi, Tom. Hi,
Anonymous.
Blood Monkey and Anonymous. We're going to be talking about Ronin tonight as a, because it's a film that Zach really likes. He likes it more than Heat. One day we'll talk about Heat, but I have to get around to watching that. I almost need like a third party to motivate me to watch Heat again. But
mm-hmm. I think the independent party.
Yeah, the independent party.
The Whigs.
Yes.
Whigs.
Okay. Go. Do Heat.
You guys talk about Ronin.
Really? I actually haven't seen it in long enough, but you saw it just recently with him, right?
Just recently.
Tonight.
Today.
So, Blaine, why don't you give us the scoop on Ronin?
No, he does. He always does.
He does scoops?
I don't want to always do the scoop. You
I don't know the
like
scoop, though, because it's like all convoluted
like
and... Huh?
What did you like about Ronin?
It's a spy movie, but it's real.
It's not even a spy movie, though, because they're mercenaries.
Yeah,
or
mercenaries.
They're spies, though. I mean...
But,
well, it is CIA, so it's kind of spy.
CIA stuff, ex-KGB stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Well,
she's like, isn't she like an IRA, ex-IRA, the main
She's
woman?
IRA, and the guy she's working for is, this is all things that, you know, turn mm-hmm. up in the end of the plot, but
mm-hmm.
he's a renegade member of
Central Intelligence.
I like the chase scenes, too.
Is he NSA?
No, Sinn Féin or something like that, the Irish guy. And,
the
Robert De Niro thing is... they set it up so that it starts with this, the quote, of, or the story about the Ronin, and like what the Ronin are, and it shows that on the...
After the end of the era, there's no need for the samurai, they essentially...
Not just that, it's that...
Well, Yojimbo's a Ronin, right?
Well, the Ronin, yeah, it's a masterless samurai, and it just explains that, and it goes into this present time thing where there's these people, and you're introduced to... Robert De Niro by, he walks to this place where he's supposed to meet these other people,
mm-hmm.
and he spends a long time scoping it out, and he plants his gun behind a crate in the back of the house, and he very carefully sees who's in there and looks at the menu, and when he goes inside, first thing he asks them is, where's the bathroom? And they're like, it's in the back. So he goes to the back, and he goes to the door that goes out to the back of the, into the alley,
which
where
happens
he gets his
to be
gun,
connected to the bathroom.
And he unlocks it, and he looks at them. And the guy's like, no, the other door. He's like, oh, okay. And he leaves it unlocked. Like, he's doing, you know, it's just mm-hmm. showing how careful he is. And then, as I was explaining to Blaine during this thing, anything that David Mamet has put dialogue into, every word, everything that's shown means something.
Every
it has something to do that has something to do with something that comes up later. One of these things, one of the things that I hadn't really, the first couple times I saw Ronin, when it came out, there was one major point that I didn't get about the film. It's because the dialogue is so at times quiet, and you don't really get what some of the people are saying at times. But now that I've seen
it, you don't hear it, Mike?
Not just that, but you just don't get it. For instance, the Robert De Niro character introduces himself as somebody who just needs some money, and he's desperate for money, and he's doing this job. But you can tell he's really careful. Later on, through several different conversations he has with people, you find out that he's no longer in the CIA, and that's what he was once in. And he got out. He was either let go or he just got out. In fact, he has a conversation with another CIA guy where he tells him, "I got out," you know, and he's like, "All right, you know." Anyway, at the very end, something that's, it's almost like a throwaway line, but I hadn't gotten it until like a few times ago that I watched it. The first couple of times I didn't get it because you just don't understand when he says it, but he comes up to the girl who's ready to drive away Seamus, the main bad guy.
The Truman Show bug-eyed Irish chick, right?
Yes. And
the Solaris chick.
She's about to drive off with that guy, and he runs up and he says, "Go, get out of here now," before Seamus gets to the car. And she just looks at him, and he says, "I didn't come back for the case. I came for your boss. I never got out, don't you see?" And I finally realized what that meant is he's still in the CIA. Yeah. When it was a bug, like, he got out so, like, as a plant type thing so that he could infiltrate it. Mm-hmm. Because before you know something, before you know that, just by inference, because it doesn't explicitly say it, you would watch the movie and think that the whole point, because later on they reiterate the samurai thing when the French guy who helps him sew up his wound after he gets shot, yeah, like, you know, midway through the movie, regales him with the tale of the 47 samurai who their master was betrayed by another lord. They spent all this time planning their revenge. They went in and they killed the guy. And then afterwards, they committed ritual suicide because there was no point for them to be around anymore because they wanted to go out with honor. And at the end of the story, the guy says, they did this because of honor, and they did this because this was what was important. They did their job. There was no more job for them to do, and they were done. And De Niro says, they were stupid, or they did it wrong, or something like that.
They made the wrong decision.
They made the wrong decision. So, like, he very clearly makes his case that, you know, there's always a master. Like, he's kind of the person that's, like, his point in the whole tale is, like, there always is a master to serve, and that you don't have to be a masterless, you know, person. Like, everyone else there is purportedly X-something. Jean Reno's character, you don't really know, because I'm not sure what kind of French...
It could,
you know,
be
special services they have.
French, the Foreign Legion or something like that, right?
No, the Foreign Legion isn't really like a spy service or anything.
Well, it wouldn't have to be spy. It could just be military, and they have some kind of counterintelligence.
Well, the only other like military person mentioned is the Sean Bean character in the beginning says he was SAS.
But he doesn't know what color the boathouse
exactly,
is.
Exactly, the boathouse at Hereford, which, you know, is apparently doesn't even matter. The point was the guy was faking just to get some action, I guess. By the way, they said they're making Ronin 2, and he's in it. So,
Sean Bean?
Yeah.
Is De Niro in it?
I don't know if De Niro's in it.
Why the hell are they making a Ronin 2?
Money.
The search for more money?
Yeah, I mean... This
Spaceballs 2, the search for more money.
It kind of seems like... I don't know. Okay.
So anyway, watching that, at the end, it's like, you know, the samurai thing, it equates because of the Cold War. People mention the Stellan Skarsgård character and the Robert De Niro character have a few conversations where they say... they had these little kind of, you know, talks with each other about how these things happened where, you know, the one side won or the other side won, and basically about how the Cold War was the master. Mm-hmm. It wasn't like their governments were the master. The Cold War was this master that this guy was talking about, kind of. Like, that's the way the metaphor kind of works within, the analogy works within the film. And that because of that, these guys end up just becoming, like, you know, just wandering mercenaries.
Well, yeah, I mean, if you've seen, what is it, Lord of War with Nicolas Cage, about the weapons dealing, it's all about how as soon as the Cold War, as soon as then they start selling it to, you know, terrorists and everything else, it's like there's...
I actually like that
movie. Yeah, it's all right. I mean...
Well, it looked like ridiculous.
I usually have trouble with the based on a true story garbage, but if you just don't care about the propaganda aspects. And Andrew Niccol usually does a pretty good job. I liked Gattaca. Sorry, I didn't mean to dissuaded. But yeah, exactly what you mean about that whole like the loss of an organizing principle or something.
Yeah,
you know? and that's probably what De Niro means, is that the principle of honor is still there, just because you don't have a literal physical master
to
guide
it
that.
Works better. I think
Bushido
would still apply. Works better once you realize that he's still in. He was never out because the reason why he's so gung-ho about this and still fights so hard the whole time is that he actually has a goal all the way till the end, and he's still for the master. Mm. And they don't ever say that he's like, you know, necessarily a good guy or anything. Yeah. He's kind of a hard, cold person and everything. And he does have his friendship with Jean Reno, but he's also kind of... Jean Reno kind of reaches out to people more in a friendly manner throughout the whole thing. And De Niro's very standoffish.
It's weird because he's sort of like the same character as in Mission Impossible. At least the first part of Mission Impossible.
Who?
Jean Reno. He's playing and there's all the scenes where they're all like in the safe house figuring stuff out and stuff. It seems like there's weird little commonalities there.
One thing about De Niro's, I've never been a huge De Niro fan. I don't think he's some fantastic actor, but I think one of the best acting scenes I've ever seen him in is in Ronin, where after he's been shot and he's laying on the table, he looks so haggard and like really distraught. And while Jean Reno's trying to pick the bullet out of him, he's making these like little hurt, like baby noises in these faces, and like usually De Niro's thing is he just makes his De Niro face and talks. Yeah, he just does his thing. Like he doesn't do anything out of the ordinary. But this was like he was actually showing, even physical pain was a different face than I'd ever seen him make before. So I thought it was a pretty good performance in the film.
Maybe they really shot him.
Maybe they did. They might have. It's one of those twisting, turning plots that...
something about an ice rink and...
Yeah, there's stuff like that, and it's like, you know, they do some detective legwork, but I think the thing that endears it so much to me is that I really love the European setting. I love stuff set in Europe.
But it's Eastern Europe, right?
It's all in France.
Paris.
It's the whole thing set in France. They go from Paris to Nice back to Paris. That's the whole movie.
Oh, strange. I remember it being more drab than you'd expect
drab,
Paris to be.
Yeah, this, that's one thing, is that, like, I guess once you get to the outskirts of Paris, it's more like the older parts of the city. There's small roads and cobblestones and, you know, walkways that go up and tunnels that go through.
Mm-hmm.
Looks kind of like the Hunchback of Notre Dame type stuff, but I just love the look of it. The car chases are fantastic. There's two really awesome car chases that were all filmed in real time. They didn't speed up the stock. There were no stunt drivers. The actors actually drove at breakneck speeds. I guess they drove at like 118 miles an hour through the streets of Paris. And
it's crazy.
There's, I don't know, just like all the guns. Like the just it's just awesome. It's almost like a non-funny like A-Team episode, like but a movie, and with like serious implications and stuff like that, and like investigating like. It's like a deep look into like the machismo of the whole like spy thing and how you know the macho attitude of this whole like, you know, it's almost like
this fraternity of
military and like there's these like codes and rules that these guys, like unwritten codes and rules that these guys do. Betrayal is like the utter worst thing, and just like the guy explains to him about the lord betraying their other lord. At the same time, De Niro is actually, you find out at the very end, is just following Seamus.
Mm-hmm.
But it gets to in a really roundabout way, because you can tell that the betrayal by Stellan Skarsgård of their group of supposedly tightly knit mercenaries really hurt him, because he goes full bore after the case.
Yeah.
With just as much intensity. You can tell he's going after it because he wants revenge and he wants the case just as badly as he wants to do his job, which his job is only to get Seamus.
But it's also, I think, maybe that he doesn't want the Russians to get the case, you know? That's something like that. It seems to me, if I remember...
It's annoying because, like, after... Like, you know, at the end, the case is, like, meaningless.
Yeah, well, it's a total...
it's filled with sand and not gasoline, right?
Yeah, it's a total thing. And well, one of the frustrating things for me, though, is that De Niro knows what's in the case, because at the end the CIA got it. They're the guys who got it. He and his buddy who.
So what was it?
Nothing. And you ask Mamet, and he says, oh, you know, you just leave that up to the viewer's imagination. That's more exciting than if I told you what it was. You know, he goes, I don't know what it is. You know, like that's the point. It doesn't matter. they kind of hint that it's something like maybe documents or something that would be important, because the whole thing is after Seamus is killed and after they get the case, as they're sitting in that cafe, him and John Reno at the very end, there's all these radio and TV broadcasts you hear in the background talking about the meeting of a peace accord between the English and Irish in Northern Ireland, between the Protestants and the Catholics, and how it was, you know, and they said it came about partially due to the death of Seamus O'Rourke, who was a renegade faction leader of Sinn Féin or something like that. So so the case may have had some sort of like documents that had something to do with that, and it was going to, I don't know. I'm not sure what they would have been that could have caused
that.
They
might have just damaged the peace process, set somebody back, you know, been some kind of a, oh, you did that too? Well, screw you then. I'm not coming to the table.
Yeah. So, I mean, the fact that the Russians, that a Russian crime organization was trying to buy these documents, though, from
somebody. Yeah, who had the documents initially?
It was just some people, and they think they said they were.
I bet it was that semi-pro golf guy from Hawaii. I bet it was all. Yeah. I bet it was the secret tapes.
Bill Belichick had the tapes the whole time. They don't ever really say who the guys were there. I think they were just some French guys who'd come into some French gangsters who'd come into, you know, contact with the case, whatever was in it. And that's the thing, is like, it's one of those things that just drives, it's the MacGuffin, it drives the plot. What's great though about him actually still being in the CIA at the end is that it doesn't, if you think about it, it's not actually driving the plot. No. The only reason Robert De Niro ostensibly is following the case is because it's going to lead him to Seamus at the very end. And until he says that little throwaway line to her that you can barely hear, that you don't quite get until you watch it twice, apparently, in my case.
I think I got it.
Until you get that, it just seems like what he's doing this for is the Ronin aspect of it, which kind of it weakens what the French guy says to him a little bit. But at the same time, it's like, you know, it's no longer a MacGuffin. It was, you know, it was something that was leading him to the bigger picture.
So that theme of like staying with the master, is that what really gets to you and what you really like?
No, I think what I like about it is that he explains to the French guy that he doesn't agree with this theory and that that's not important to him. But then
you don't know if that's like a part of his character that he's, you know, trying to
act tough and stuff like that. Well, but because he portrays that through his actions by going so hardcore after the case still, like following it and doing his best at, like...
Well, it could have been, like, following it just because that one Irish girl who was connected to Seamus, you know...
Yeah, I know, but I'm saying is that he thinks that she betrayed him.
Oh, yeah.
So, like, the betrayal to him is just as important as the job that he's supposed to be doing for his master, which is still America. Yeah. You know, Uncle Sam wants him to get Seamus.
And he gets kind of bondish with her at some point, right?
Oh, yeah, I think
Do they do it, or do they make out?
Like, they imply. They're staking out the villa.
Yeah, I remember that.
And he kisses her as the cops drive by. Then they sit down. He just kind of stares off again. And she sits there for a minute. She rolls over on him, and they start making out. So you assume they had a little...
I always thought that betrayed his character a little, too. Like, it made no sense in terms of his character to be that way. I can almost never find find a good reason for why people should be getting in
on
a movie.
Because I think that it gives other reasons for him to... That's why the betrayal hurts him more.
A bit of a cinematic prude. Yeah, I guess
I just think in terms of... Anything that Mamet has written is like, it's all really cold. It's almost like emotionless. Yeah. Like there isn't real depth of character and stuff, but it's so technically proficient all the way through in terms of writing and plot and everything like that.
But he's written stuff
that works on every single.
He's thing. Like State in Maine is like a comedy that he wrote, and it's like kind of, it's got cuteness
to it. It's different.
And
yeah,
stuff.
It's still that's it's like really unlike his other stuff.
There's like a romance between Seymour Hoffman and what's her name? Julianne Moore, I think. It kind of seems cute and nice.
I've always liked The Edge because it works the same way as a thriller.
It is
so technically proficient in terms of writing that, like, you know, like he knows exactly what he's doing. He leaves, you know, there's just not like there's not problems with things he writes. There's no problems with it. Like, it's all
like an episode of Cowboy Bebop.
It's so much substance. It's not just style. He doesn't write style into something except for in the heist in a movie like Heist or something like that. The style is in the dialogue because.
My man's so cool.
People talk like they're, you know, in.
There's a little bit of that style like dialogue. Well, maybe not so much the dialogue, but in Spanish Prisoner, it's a little. It seems like there's some kind of a sort of style to the way that they behave. But that could just be it was the first Mamet movie I ever watched. And so the Mamet style struck me.
Heist has some. has some really crazy lines in it that I've always... that's one of my favorite movies. I've always loved Heist. But Danny DeVito in part says... somebody asks him something, why he would care so much about this thing he's making him do, and he says everybody needs money. That's why they call it money.
Like, yeah, that's right. Like, there's lines that's great.
Like, it doesn't mean anything, but it just sounds like you're like, what?
Yeah, you know,
like, and but it sounds cool.
But it's when DeVito says it.
Yeah, so, yeah, Danny DeVito says it and it sounds cool. What does that tell you? You know, like,
we'll have to resort to foul play.
Heist.
That's one with Gene Hackman and the boat.
You haven't seen Heist?
Oh, yeah, I've seen
And stupid Rebecca Pigeon, but she betrays him.
That was a good movie.
But she gets what she deserves.
Well, she gets what she deserves is that he gets away with all of the gold.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that was sweet. Had a lot of...
You can talk about
it, but like... did get a little, like, too many twists. It seemed like it was a twist and a twist.
Well, that's what it seemed like in this movie, kind of, but, like... Well, not a lot of twists, but, like, betrayals or something.
Yeah, the betrayals run deep. Well, those other betrayals are, Skarsgård, before he gets with this group, is contacted by... He's ex-KGB, but apparently he's still working for Russians, too. So his plan
like
is to get the case.
Though?
The Russians gave him the fake case.
Mm-hmm.
He plants the bomb in it. He gets away with the real case. And then he's supposed to give it to the... He's supposed to sell it to the Russians. But that guy betrays him. He ends up killing him.
Yeah.
And that guy apparently worked with the Mickey guy.
It's about trust. You gotta have trust.
I don't think it's really about trust. It's about the whole thing's just about
trust.
The logistics of knowing that you could hand some guy a briefcase full of money for whatever he's holding, or you could do it and then kill him and take your money back. And that seems to be the overlying thing with everyone.
Yeah, that's a theme in that movie.
And that's what
much like with the
except then eBay would never
the
work,
gun
right?
Thing.
you'd get a
well, a lot of people do get ripped off on eBay.
Yeah, that too.
There's a wide variety of
Give
awesome
me the money.
Weapons.
I'll send you the package.
There's a wide variety of
COD,
awesome weapons
right?
used in this movie. When they stage the ambush, it seems like every time like Robert De Niro pops up out of the car with this like with this bazooka thing, and he shoots the first car, and then he goes back in the car and he pulls out like a machine gun, right? Whatever it is.
It's like
in
that episode of Outlaw Star,
and then like
he
goes back in the car and pulls out another gun. Like every time anyone pulls out a different gun, it's like a gun you hadn't seen before in the movie yet. Like this was like it's just a cool gun.
They were heavily armed, yeah.
That's what I like.
There's
about
always
that.
Just like cool spy stuff about like guys being paranoid and not even spy stuff, just like I guess just like really good army type stuff. Like when they first make they have a meet with some gun sellers in Paris in the beginning, and the guys park in this in this under this overhang thing, and engineer's like, I don't want to go in there, it doesn't feel right. And so he stays back, and like a boat goes by, and you see, and it the lights flash on a guy who's a shooter up on the bridge, and he sees it, and they start blasting away at everybody, and it's just like it just looks so cool. I don't know.
No, it's a good one.
It's just a great movie.
Ronin's a good one. You guys should check it out if you haven't seen it. If you have, maybe you should check it out again because we just did a review of it and we said it was good. I mean, I didn't mean to close that. Are you still? You got more to say? Or?
No, I want you guys to talk about Ronin.
Blaine, I have nothing
just
to
watch
say.
You can add some stuff in there.
I just agree with you.
You don't have to agree with me. Say what you want.
Say something. I could maybe disagree a little. Not for the sake of it, but just it didn't. You really love it, and I mean, I'm obviously not going to try and convince you. No, it's not as good as you think it is, because that's dumb. Mm-hmm. But it seems to me like I mean, what I do like is I like the character. I like the De Niro character. Now, I completely forgotten that whole thing about the end. I've only seen it once in full. Like actually, I didn't watch it on TV. I actually like saw it. I think. And it was. I remember being good. I remember being like a good Saturday afternoon. You're just chilling out. You're watching it, kind of movie. A little slow in some parts. A little confusing. There is that sort of like, who's doing what to who. It's kind of convoluted because there's like a lot of like there's the Russians. There's the Irish. There's the CIA. It's kind of like, why does the CIA even care about this? Why is this even in their
purview? Always in the everybody's business.
Yeah, kind of. And then like, what's the locale? Like, I mean, I don't know if I was ever clear that it was Paris.
they say.
And then they bring in this whole thing about the ice skating rink and this ice skater. Well, and it just, it gets, I remember it being, for me, if I felt a little overwhelmed by what I think it had, had maybe too much convolution in it. The car chases I remember were really good. I when he's chasing for the case, that was exciting. Yeah. That works. One thing I'm never too big on, and it's sort of strange because I like a good I like a good gunfight in a church, but gunfights can sometimes just be kind of like you're waiting for the story to get moved along, because it's not like a lot happens when there's a gunfight. There's no narrative changing. It's unless someone gets killed.
There's not a lot of huge gunfights.
No, and there isn't. There isn't. It's actually pretty subdued. I like sort of some of the smaller parts, but I think just from the get-go, I was confused. And so I had trouble. It's tough to pick. The De Niro character is so flat, and it's hard for you to root for him at the beginning, until maybe a little more where he stands, because you're like, well, is he gonna help these guys do something that could be potentially very bad, like in a moral kind of way? Is he an amoral character or an immoral character? And that's sort of maybe what the theme is. This Ronin, I don't have a master anymore, so I don't have a code. But he sort of does, and he's so proficient at his, Zach was saying, in terms of making sure he does things well, and he's very calm and very even about things. The part I've seen two or three times, Ronin is one of those TV movies for me, because it's like The Godfather, and there's a couple other ones that I always, there's another one I always say to tell everybody, oh, once I see that it's on TV, I got to watch a few minutes of it, even because I'm really anti that. Mm-hmm. But it's mainly because I really like the part about the boathouse where he's warming out right. Sean Bean, he thinks he's a tough guy, but he's not. I think that's really all there is to that scene. It's not really like he's a spy. Because does he come back in that movie later? Does he betray
Sean
them
Bean
later?
Doesn't. That was just like...
Just to show that De Niro
like
could
it's like
identify
weeding out,
people.
It's weeding out of characters you think might have a larger role in things, and then it leans up and you realize these guys, this is the focus
group. Yeah, these are now. Elite, yeah.
But then there becomes more betrayals within that focus group.
And so
the thing I love about it is there's things like... They show these things that seem like minute nothing. For instance, in one part, they're in their little apartment in Nice when they're waiting for this whole thing to happen. Or actually, it's back in Paris. But
is it the coffee?
Not the coffee bar.
No, but that's the thing I was talking about. The coffee cup is great.
Yeah, he sets it up on the table. And he says, "I ambushed you into the coffee," and like,
no. He's like, "I just took you over the cup for the fucking cup of coffee."
Yeah. Well, no, he says, "I ambushed you into it." We just watched it, and because he was talking about the ambush, yeah, Sean Bean's drawing the ambush, and he draws the two shooters,
and
he's
like, "You shoot each other,
dead," is what he said. Yeah. He said they'll kill each other dead, and there's this scene where they're talking about. He's like, "Well, listen, get some money. We're gonna go stake out the situation. I'm gonna see how this group that's protecting the case operates." And they leave. They're walking down the stairs. You see a window on the inside of their apartment that faces into the stairwell, and a hand starts spray painting over it. And every time you watch it, you think that's weird. Then you think, oh well, they're just spray painting the window so no one can look in on their little crime base.
Yeah.
Here.
Yeah.
Later on, a few scenes later, is when the big ambush happens, and then that's when the initial case switch happens. Mm-hmm. And he finds out it's a fake because he looks down at his hand in his sleeve after he's handed it to Skip Suddeth, the driver, and he says he sees paint on it. And you realize at that moment, like, I didn't realize the first time I saw it, because it's almost one of those things that... Exactly. It's like Mamet just puts these things in there that...
So you'll see it on third viewing.
Yeah, you watch again, you realize he completely foreshadowed that. I didn't even notice it. You realize who's
saying, who's... I don't think foreshadowing is correctly, but he did give you an indication on how to... Oh, well, then that...
Well, and they foreshadow way earlier that he's going to be the betrayer by the fact that every time they show
he's looking
kind of
evil.
It's like ominous music,
yeah,
and he sits
exactly.
there. He does the reflexes thing where he knocks his coffee cup off and catches it.
But it's also kind of a weird movie where even De Niro could be the bad guy in it, and you don't really know... You know, it kind of keeps you guessing the whole time, which is probably why... and I've gotten better at this, but I'm still sort of...
I don't think it ever comes off like De Niro could be. Like,
the actions that they're taking, you don't know what this case is, and you don't know who's going to be getting it.
Yeah.
He might be like an accessory to something.
Yeah, but
it's not like, you know straight off the bat that from their demeanor and their characters, that De Niro and John Reno are like the good guys.
Yeah.
Because they're friendly.
But that's always the kind of thing, well, then they flip it around. If you really want to flip it around, then you thought he was the good guy the whole time, and then he shoots you.
If anyone was going to flip around, it would have been Mamet, and he didn't. So.
Yeah, exactly. That's why I knew it going into it. Yeah. I was like, well, this could be all bets are off. And, so it was a little too convoluted for me, and it was kind of tough to pick a protagonist. But I'm not saying it's a bad film. I would probably give it an A-. If I had to rate it, which I just did.
Well, have you seen it all?
No, I've seen it. It's just been a while. Probably why I'd give it an A-.
Well, here's the thing: the stuff you're talking about in terms of the convoluted aspects of it. Mm-hmm. I've seen it a dozen times, and
and you get a little more each time.
Well, like this last time, I absolutely understood every single thing that happened at this time. Like,
you even explained to me.
I had to explain to him a few things. There's just some things they don't explain, but become apparent much later.
Yeah.
And it's apparent in a throwaway way that doesn't even really matter, but it explains something that happened long ago. When they first meet the gun sellers in Paris, they don't explain what they're going to do. It just shows them loading up their own guns.
Yeah.
And she gives them some money. They complain about something. He says he wants to go with her. She says, no, you go with them. So they go and they're sitting in this car, and Sean Bean's really nervous, and these guys come, and you have no idea why they're meeting some guys in Paris that have nothing to do with this case thing.
Yeah.
And at one point, though, someone says in French to another guy, he says, and then it's in subtitles, and if you're not looking, you won't get it. It says, just because we're buying guns doesn't mean we didn't bring any. Like, he's warning the guy. Like, and that's the only time you get the indication that that's what they're there doing. And there's some, like, kingpin their guy in, like, a Russian hat who's, like, they're whispering to each other. And it's just, like,
it's this seedy underworld thing. It's that seedy underworld thing that is just, like, it's tough to, like, get around.
This time through, like, I think this plot is actually not very convoluted at all. But the way it's presented, it's like a Raymond Chandler thing in that what happens throughout this thing is completely unimportant. Like, the point is... it's just the betrayal thing, the following the case, and then, you know, it leading him to the guy he's trying to get at the end. And, like, that's the whole
point. Yeah, at a certain point, I do kind of give up on trying to figure out the nuances when I've watched it. And then I did enjoy it a lot more when I'm like, oh, okay, I'm just follow the case, you know?
And the thing is, you know, and I had a problem with that probably, like, the third time I watched it. I was like, I really want to understand what's going on. And then when I realized what it was, I was like, oh, it's actually not that complicated.
No,
you just kind of have to pick up on lines you wouldn't always get until you saw it a second time or whatever.
So, I mean, if it's worth it to you to watch it once or twice, I mean, and maybe I'm just dumb and I couldn't get it the first time.
That's probably what it is. I think that's Blaine. I decided I had to spell it out for him.
Well,
I'm just kidding.
You use the speak and spell. The cow goes moo. The duck goes quack. Ronan. The duck goes quack.
Ronan is a beautiful thing. I think I like it just a little better than Gremlins 2.
Gremlins 2 is good.
The new batch.
The new batch with the one that's all talking.
The new batch.
And he's English. Because that makes him sophisticated.
Who was that voice? The voice of him. It was like it was someone ridiculous. It was like I don't remember.
Like Orson Welles or something, wasn't it? No, Orson Welles was dead after he did Unicron.
Gremlins 2. I want to find out right now.
Gremlins 2. Have you seen Garbage Pail Kids?
Yeah, that's an awesome movie. Garbage Pail Kids. This is the part where he does the flip.
Tony Randall. Tony Randall did the voice of the talking one.
Oh, that makes sense. I don't know why. And then somehow they snuck into like a John Wayne movie at one point.
Yeah. All I noticed that the first one was really violent. Like they're like cutting their heads off and stuff. Like in one part, he uses that sword,
and the one gets microwaved.
Yeah, and I remember reading that was one of that movie and one other. Temple of Doom were both came out in the same year that they decided that you know there's got to be PG-13. There's got to be a new rating. So then Red Dawn was the first one. There.
Yeah, I mean, I remember my experiences watching the first Gremlins. Monster movies just scare the hell out of me when I was a little kid. Like all of them did. And Gremlins is the one where you're watching it and you're kind of freaked and you're kind of creepy as a little kid, creeped out what's going on. And then like about like a third of the way, two thirds of the way into it, I just started laughing like a lot. And I'm like, this is like just a funny, like it's more of an adventure movie. You're not really adventure, but it's so ridiculous that it's not really scary anymore. It kind of loses that fear part. And the second one has no scariness in it really. The spider thing's kind of creepy, but it's just weird. So I remember that was an interesting experience. Yeah, little mini review of Gremlins on top of your Ronin for you there. Okay, guys. Send an email to feudalpodcast@gmail.com. We should be bona fide on iTunes here pretty soon, so you can just search feudal title, I think, is actually what's listed on there. Sunrise, shit,
気の案内誇り高い愛ない俺はブレイブレない無駄に吠えない変われないっていう人物さえ引き受けた仕事こなす毎回世界が知った独特なスタイル SMURAI Kill is love is killなる気を叩けるスキル I kill 止めにまずんの例を見るシルスティルハートで探れたレール Yeah 歌に回り巡り舞い降りる20 now の腰まだ立ち笑う髪ウッウッウッウッ